Pachinko. Episodes 1 through 4 are over, but here on Post Show Recaps, we're just getting started. My name is Ariel, and I am absolutely thrilled to be joined by my IRL friend, Soon. Soon, how are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm so happy. This is so weird. I'm so excited. I'm so happy that you were willing to do this, and I feel like hopefully everyone has a good time. In general, what's your history with this project? Were you familiar with the book? Like, what's your story with Pachinko?
I had heard about the book, but I'm not a big reader, to be totally honest. Mm-hmm. But, you know, obviously I'd heard about the book, and then you had brought to my attention that it was a series. So yeah. I checked out the trailer, and I've been going on a big K-drama binge for the last 2 years, you know, during COVID. So, right. You know, recognized a couple of the actors in it, and I was like, all right, I'll watch this.
Yeah, I had heard about the show. You know, I feel like Apple TV is kind of on a really fun kick right now as far as their shows, really good quality, you know, Severance and For All Mankind has gotten a lot of buzz for a few years. And this one, the reviews were kind of incredible. Like, you know, one of my go-to critics, Alan Sepinwall, he basically was like, do not miss this. And I was like, okay, that's all I need to hear. And it has no one who's really famous here in the US, I guess, you know, with the exception of Yoon Ye-jun, who won the Oscar for, apologies for the horrible pronunciation, won the Oscar for Minari, and Jimmy Simpson, who was on, you know, Westworld. But for the most part, these are all unknown actors to like the majority of American audiences. Are you familiar with any of these people, Soon, in your exploration of K-dramas?
Yes, any self-respecting K-drama addict will know that Lee Min-ho is one of the biggest stars in Asia.
Uh-huh. Yes, him I have heard of, even though I'm not really familiar with him.
Yeah, no, he has starred in every, like, classic K-drama. I think, you know, if you ever look at the list of, like, you know, how to get into, like, K-dramas, watch these shows, like, he is such a, like, I like grew up with him. I'm trying to think of like what he would be the equivalent to. I mean, I wouldn't say like someone like Tom Cruise, obviously, because like, you know what, Leonardo DiCaprio. He's like the Leo DiCaprio, I would say.
Yeah, like he's been around for so long.
He has been around for a really long time. And you know, I feel like even though I binged everything in like the last 2 years, it's just, you know, his entire career, like every show that he's been in has been like a big success, I feel like. And very well known in Asia. So I think that was a good move on, I guess, Apple TV's part, and like, you know, the show producers, you know, trying, you know, getting him on board, because I think that'll really bring in the Asian audience. You know, that's appealing. And then also Jin Ha, who plays like the grandson.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Solomon.
I actually just saw him in Love Life on HBO. On the plane ride to LA last week.
Okay.
And I know it's just like random, but Anna Kendrick's in it. So I was like, oh yeah, I'll just watch this. It's like a half hour, you know, like dramedy type thing. Mm-hmm. And he plays one of her love interests. And I had never seen him in anything before. And I was like, who is this like good looking, you know, man? Mm-hmm. He has like a beard in the show and he looks really good in it, I personally think. But then it was like to see him like in the next show that I was watching, you know, it's kind of one of those things where it's like, oh, like, is he having a moment? Like, is, you know, he the next like kind of big thing? But apparently, you know, he's like, he was on Broadway before, he started in Hamilton. Like Wikipedia, right? You like just.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. I found that out recently too, of like, oh, I didn't know. I mean, I never saw Hamilton. Don't really have any interest, but I was like, wow, that's not, you know, he's certainly not a, like I had said previously, like not a household name. He was in Devs too, which is a show that I watched, like a mini series on Hulu, I think probably 2020 at this point. And I don't I think he was the boyfriend. Wow, I just blew my own mind. I think he was the boyfriend of the main character. I just realized. So yeah, I guess I am a fan. I didn't know that until now. But yeah, to your point, it makes sense that they would want, you know, to appeal, you know, everybody's push, right, is to like gain more international audience, not just like local audiences. So they would want literally a truly international audience of like people who are famous across different places in the world. Yeah. So we've talked a little bit about the actors. So what are your like overall thoughts about the show? I guess, you know, before we get into like some plot stuff, how are you feeling about the show so far in these like first four episodes?
I was emotionally exhausted after probably the third. I mean, it's not bad. Like, it's definitely like a show that you have to watch like at a certain pace. You know, certain mm-hmm. shows, there's a lot going on.
Mm-hmm.
So not a good idea to like binge it. You know, I don't recommend doing it in one sitting. I think mm-hmm. you need to kind of like watch it. You know, take it in, reflect, mm-hmm. and then you know, sometimes like that's a bad thing about like shows that come out all at once, you know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I kind of like that after like the fourth episode, they were kind of, well, now it's like a weekly thing, so I have to wait yes. a week to process yes. and then move on. So, but yeah. in the meantime, I just downloaded the audiobook. So I always like to read the book after I like watch the show or the movie, or like before if I have time, just because obviously there are details in a book that, you know, explain a lot of things that don't necessarily come through in a mm-hmm. show or a movie.
Right.
So you kind of like miss certain things. Like I know when we were watching part of it earlier, you know, with the two girls who were, you know, washing clothes with her. Mm-hmm. We're like, who is that? And it's like, I knew who they were only because of the book. Not mm-hmm. that it was like explicitly explained in the show. So it's like little details like that. So I always recommend reading like both like the book and then watching the movie or the show, so you can get like yeah. the full context of something. So, you know, so far it's good. It's just, you know,
it's a lot.
It's very heavy. It's heavy. Yeah. It's like a drama. it's a lot, drama. Yeah. It's dramatic.
It's definitely a drama. It released on March 25th, based on the book, like we established. I didn't know it was the author is a Manhattan-based author, Min Jin Lee, television show created by Sue Hugh. And we'll be talking about, I mean, you know, we've already talked a little bit about this, but we'll be talking about episodes 1 through 4, and then we will be back at the tail end of the season to discuss the back half, episodes 5 through 8. And, you know, on this journey, it's supposed to be the book, I believe, is long, and this series, they have like a multi-season plan for it, because obviously it's a multi-generational show, a lot of multis in there. And that's, you know, just for me personally, that's what I enjoy the most. Like, I have read books in the past of, I think it was Michael Cunningham wrote a book, the author of the Hours. I can't remember the name of the book now. I was trying to look it up real quick. But it's like a story told in chapters, and like each chapter is a different family member telling the story, and it goes like across a time span. But here we're being told like the same, like within the same episode, we're getting like multiple timelines. And I think that works really well, because it's not, you know, it's not time, we're not time traveling, but we're being told like a linear story kind of out of order, but in a way that, that I think is really interesting. In the book so far, right, because you've listened to some of the book, you said, is it told in the same way, like as far as like linear but out of order, or like is it kind of just starting the beginning, or like what's your experience with that so far?
It does, you know, kind of skip. It's not, it doesn't skip like time
mm-hmm.
per se. Like it's not like present, past,
right,
you know, whatever. It doesn't do that, but it does tell the story. Like, it mostly right now it's all taking place like in the same like time period, but just from like different POVs.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
But yeah, I mean, that makes more sense. I mean, sometimes like doing like a time jump thing in a show can be tricky if it's not done well. It's just kind of annoying and confusing.
But not here.
I don't know how I feel about the time jumping back and forth in this show yet. Like, it's not annoying. Yeah. But I'm like, would it have been better if it was a chronological thing? I mean, I think it would have been made more sense if it was chronological, if it is supposed to be like a multi-season series.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's interesting to consider. Like, we've definitely seen, right, we've in other genres, whatever, other shows, we have seen like the chronological story before and like skipping time. But I love the idea of like learning about characters and about a family history in a way that is different. Like, it's much more interesting to me to be told this way. And maybe it's because of, you know, where we are in the world of pop culture now with like multiverses and the MCU, and like everything has to be like bigger and better and like kind of blow your mind in a way that I think there's more pressure now to do that kind of thing than there used to be. And with this, it's kind of like we can still tell a quote unquote normal story that takes place in reality, but tell it in an interesting way that gives it like a little bit of that wrinkle of like specialness, so that people can kind of get their, like, I don't know, I guess time travel fix, for lack of a better phrase. And, you know, for me personally, it is really interesting to consider, you know, I have talked about on other podcasts that like I'm first generation, you know, came to the, you know, my parents came to the US from a different country. And it's interesting to consider like what their experiences were, and like to get perspective on like where they came from. And like, I always like struggle with this thought of like, I will never fully understand, no matter how long I talk to my parents, I will never fully like really understand the journey of them getting here and like what they went through. And like, you know, I wish that I could like go back in time in a sense and like see their lives before they came here, if that makes sense. Like, to learn about them, who they were before they were my parents. That's where like this show for me like is interesting, because it's kind of like a treat. I don't know if you feel, you know, similarly, or if you feel like it's too much.
No, it's definitely the appeal of the show, right? It's, you know, same as someone who, you know, is like first generation, you know, came here with my parents, but I was very young. So, you know, even though I was kind of witnessing what they were going through, I wasn't old enough to process like what it actually meant.
Right.
But at the same time, like, and it happens in the show too, not a day goes by when I'm not reminded of the sacrifices that they made to, you know, give me a better life. So,
yep.
So yeah. I'm very aware of, you know, how hard it was for them to, you know, come to a country where they, you know, didn't speak the language, like, you know, didn't have an education here, came with like nothing and, you know, built a life around that. And I don't feel like that is something that our generation, you know, is really prone to do. I really feel like that was maybe like our parents' generation is the last generation that would just pick up and move to a completely different country. And you know what I mean? And it takes a lot of guts, and I have a lot of respect, you know, but there is kind of that constant reminder, like, don't you forget what we did for you.
Yeah, your life.
It's a lot of pressure, you know, on us.
Yeah.
To take that and, you know, make a better life for ourselves. And, you know, that's something that, you know, Solomon, I think, deals with on this show as well. Like, he feels this pressure, and, you know, he went to America and, like, he's supposed to be this big hotshot, you know, banker. And that's why the stakes are so high for him when he goes back home, because he wants to make his, you know, family proud. But his grandma sees like right through him, and
she has some great like lines that she throws at him. But I think yeah, it is so interesting to like consider, you know, his experience, especially because it's the one that like we can, you know, kind of identify with as much, you know, as out of everyone else in the story. And like, to your point about pressure that you feel and you're constantly reminded, that's certainly something that like my parents, really my dad, was always doing. And it's like, you know, they come here and then you're kind of like stuck in between, right? Where you're like, here we have, it's even more complicated for him because he has like American culture, then he has like Korean culture, and also like the Japanese wrinkle because of, you know, him growing up there, but being like Korean descent. It's like super fascinating. Like your time is split, because when you're at home, you're speaking a different language, and then you go out into the world and you're speaking English, and it's like this culture clash that I think, you know, I want to say makes us more well-rounded, but it is also can be a little crazy making and like
identity crisis. Cause yeah. Like, who am I? Am I American? Am I, you know, Korean? Am I, you know, it's a lot of different things. Like, we're definitely kind of like that transitional generation of, you know, like our kids, I mean, we say this, right? We sound like our parents, but it's like our kids will have a better life.
Yeah.
But they'll have different problems.
Yeah, they have climate change to do with. But yeah, it is interesting to consider. So the story takes place. Really, it's we already mentioned her character, but this character is played by two different actresses at different ages. You have older Sunja and younger Sunja, teen Sunja, as this is IMDb. Yoon-ya Jung, excuse me, plays older Sunja. She's Oscar winner, as we already said. We have Mina Kim. She seems like she's like a newbie. Is there any, was she on your K-drama radar before this?
No, but I think in the trailer it said introducing, right?
Yeah, see, which okay, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, this is her first.
Her
one
debut.
One of her first roles. And, you know, I think she's definitely my favorite part of the show so far. And I mean that, like, both. I don't mean either one. I think there is, like, very clearly a thread that runs between them. Like, the two actresses are doing like similar things in the way they like bring that character to life. And it does feel like she's, I mean, not only just the main character, but like the emotional heart of the show. Like, everything else is like revolving around her. She's the sun, and all the planets are just revolving around her. Episode one starts out, and, you know, they're explaining to us a little bit, you know, we get some cards up, they explain to us that, you know, basically the Japanese occupation of Korea, and how, you know, and then we see very quickly how a lot of people were, you know, taken advantage of, and they're treated as like second class citizens, basically. And unfortunately, this happened all over the world at different times, so it's just like this piece of the world's version of that story. And we meet her mother in the beginning, who has had like three miscarriages before her, and is basically like praying and goes to see someone to like get a blessing, basically, of like, now Sunja is in her mother's stomach and the mother is hoping that the baby will be healthy. And we literally get a flash right away of her grandson, who we later meet, Solomon, like in the US, and we know basically that we're told pretty much off the bat that it's like things are looking good and like the family will thrive, but there will be you know, trauma basically to come. It's kind of an auspicious beginning, and it's kind of beautiful to see them dancing like that, but also it's, you know, like, this show is heavy, and it just seems really heavy, and like heavy stuff is coming after this. Okay, so in the beginning we meet, then we have a little bit of like a flash forward, and Sunja has been born, and she's a very bold child, I would say. And like, I think again, the energy that the other actresses are bringing matches the energy of this little girl who we meet, who's like, she basically isn't afraid of anyone, even though she's been told that she should be afraid of certain people. This is a much bolder child than I certainly associate with myself. She's not afraid of like the Japanese policemen who like seem to be coming through, and she's told that she can't, you know, she shouldn't even make eye contact with them. And she's helping children in the market. She seems like a fun kid. Are you a fan of kids in general, Soon? How do you feel about children?
You already knew the answer to that.
I did, but you know, you gotta ask. So Sunja, you know, she's super outgoing. She seems to be charming everyone. Do you think that she is as charming as she presents herself? As charming as certainly as she thinks she is? Because, you know, she gets involved in some sticky situations early on.
You mean like little Sunja, not teen Sunja, right?
Yes, sorry. Yeah, I mean the earliest Sunja that we meet, the littlest Sunja.
I think, you know, the most appealing part of young Sunja was the relationship she had with her father.
Yeah.
You know, like those were like the best moments, I think. I didn't really, it's a personal preference, I didn't really care for the mm-hmm. moments where she was like, you know, being a mischievous little child, and you know, like mm-hmm. you know, that's, I mean, that's fine, but I really
that's just children being children.
That's fine. Mm-hmm. But I really, you know, did like those moments, you know, that she had with her dad. They had a very special relationship, you know, that mm-hmm. really impacts her, you know, mm-hmm. and her future, you know, everything that he kind of like wanted for her, and like the relationship that they had, you know, she carries that with her through the rest of her life.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really heartwarming, and, you know, reminded me of like my relationship like with my father, and you know, being an only child, and you know, that kind of thing. So that's what stuck out to me, but I really think it's probably a personal preference for everybody.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think especially with children like that, you either connect with them in very specific ways, or you don't connect with them at all. But I think to your point, it is about like what experiences you bring, what, you know, what resonates with you. But she does do something that I think is really kind. We see her like warn this guy. Basically, there's an evening where, you know, her parents run a boarding house, which is basically like a small hotel of sorts, maybe more like a hostel. And there are some people staying there who are talking smack about like Japanese people, more so specifically like the Japanese authorities that kind of like lord over them. And this guy says something like, we should all pick up a rock and like, you know, throw them at Japanese people, and that's like apparently a big no-no. And her parents are worried about it, and she warns the guy. She's like, my parents are worried, and like you should probably like run away. Was that the right call? Should she have warned this guy?
Well, it didn't really turn out that great for him in the end, so I feel like it's a moot point. But no, I get it. I mean, she was trying to do the right thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it shows more so certainly like her morals, right? Like that she's willing to go out on a limb and kind of warn him regardless of, because he did get away. He just got caught in the end. So I guess, yeah, to your point, it didn't really change all that much.
It's like, nice try.
She really did try. And yes, to your, like you said, she has some really beautiful moments with her dad where she's like fishing in the water for, I think it was abalone or something, that, you know, that she's like picking off the rocks underwater, and there's like a scary moment where like she might be underwater too long. He tells her that he, you know, he used to think, her father tells her that he used to think that he was like cursed, and you know, then he wouldn't have a family and things wouldn't turn out good for him. And then, you know, her mom came along and she came along, and basically like he saw it as like his responsibility to like make sure that she had a good life, basically. And I think this is some of the stuff that you were certainly touching on, of like her special relationship with her father. It's very sweet to see. We also meet Solomon, who we had already mentioned, who is Sunja's grandson, in 1989. And he's like this powerful banker, as we said, or like certainly likes to think of himself as one. And basically he wants a promotion. They don't give it to him. Probably, I mean, it's the 80s, probably because he seems to be the only Asian guy there. They're all white guys. But he plays like his trump card of like, oh, there's some really big deal. There's some land developer in like Tokyo or right outside of Tokyo that I can talk about, but I want my money and I want my bonus and I want, you know, everything that's coming to me basically that he clearly deserves. And this is like how he comes back into the fold of the story of Sunja, his grandmother, and like who he probably hasn't seen for a while. Did this stuff work for you as well as some of the other like back home story or like Sunja, whether it's like old Sunja or young Sunja? Were you interested in like his story piece of it in Solomon?
It did, because he obviously, you know, relating to him on a very different level of, you know, like you and me, right? Like, mm-hmm. we are the product of, you know, generations of people who made sacrifices to make sure that we had a better life. And, you know, him like, you know, trying to make it, you know, in this competitive environment, you know, obviously, yeah. like back then, you know, being Asian was not seen as, I don't know, a reason to hire someone or promote someone. As yeah. opposed to now, where diversifying the workplace is such a priority for people. Right. You know, he really had to kind of like fight his way up. And I think some of the struggles that he has, you know, I can relate to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially like trying to make my family proud and
yeah.
all that stuff. And then ultimately, is that what's making me happy? Like, maybe not. You know, mm-hmm. and I only say that because, you know, when we watch the end of the fourth episode together, you know, that like final scene with him, you're just like, oh, that's like all of us sometimes. Mm-hmm. We just want to just say screw it all and, you know, just
yeah,
dance in the rain and, you know, be free.
Be free. No, it's true. I think that's a great point. It's definitely relatable. Like he certainly where he ends up at the end of that episode, he goes back to, like I had previously said, he is like using his connections back home to try to secure this deal that is going to get him ahead at his workplace. But he goes to his dad's pachinko bar, or pachinko parlor rather, which is a kind of like pinball. It's way more fun. I have played pachinko like a couple of times in my life because I had a friend. I was trying to remember actually what childhood friend it was that had a pachinko machine, or where I encountered it, because I remember like the visceral experience of playing it, but I can't remember like where I was.
So where did you play it?
Somebody had a machine. Like, that's what I was saying. I was trying to remember who it was. Probably around like junior high-ish. Like, you know, you kind of like have a sense of yourself, what age you were when you did something. It was at someone's house. I don't know. And obviously it wasn't a parlor. It was just like one solitary like pachinko machine. It's a much more satisfying experience than pinball for me, because there are like there's so many of those, so many more of those metal balls, and like there's, it just seems more fruitful, like more more of a fun game than pinball, which is just kind of like don't get the ball, don't let the ball fall or whatever. I mean, I've only played pinball a couple of times, but I'm definitely more of a fan of pachinko. Even the name is fun to say,
but it's like gambling, right?
Yeah, I mean, for sure here when it's like a parlor, it's basically like slot machines in a sense, right? Because there's like all the ones and everybody goes and that's the only option. You don't go there to play anything else. Like pachinko's all they have seemingly. So I haven't had that experience. But yeah, there is an element of like when you spend money on it, I guess, right? Because I did it at someone's house. You put in quarters or tokens or whatever it is, and then you basically lose your money unless you win. Like I think the whole time, the whole four episodes, we saw like one lady win. I thought it was a fun game. But he goes to visit his dad, who has that parlor, and obviously like he grew up around that world. And he's talking to his grandma, and I love his grandma, to your point that you made previously of like his grandma sees right through him. Sanja, his grandma, to be clear, when she's like, oh, did your father tell you he's opening a new pachinko parlor? And Solomon's like, no. And then she's like, oh, I don't want to hear, don't bring that shame here, you know, that you would bring to your father. And he's like, what are you talking about? And she's like, I've been alive long enough to know what shame smells like. I see right through you. I thought that was so funny.
Yeah. And that scene where he's like helping her cook and he burns something and is about to throw it out, and she's like, why are you throwing away perfectly good food? And you know, we've all been there, right? And that only happens with people who have lived a very like basically poverty.
Yeah,
you know, because they know like you don't throw away food.
No, unless it's like actively on fire, don't. And even then, you got to put it out first. But unless it's like disintegrated, you could probably get some food out of it.
Like, do you get yelled at for not cleaning your plate?
Yeah, I did. I did for a while. And yeah, anything that was like about being a picky eater, it was like not really tolerated, or certainly tolerated less than possibly some other people. But there were some things for sure that like feel like it's in the same family, you know, of like this kind of behavior. It's like, don't do that, for just because that's how they were raised in a sense, right?
They're like, just be grateful there's food on the table, like
exactly
everything. My mom still gets mad at me if I don't finish everything on my plate, and I'm like, first of all, don't give me all that food then. And
second, right, exactly. Don't like that. It's funny you say that, because for me, when I was a little kid, like at some point we transitioned to us serving ourselves, because to your point, when they're controlling what they give you and you don't finish, it's like, well, I didn't choose this. You loaded it all in the plate, and that was like too much food. I don't want to eat all that.
Well, the bigger, you know, thing is as well, when they give us a lecture about, you know, the sacrifices that they made, I'm like, well, I also did not decide to come here. Yeah, right. You decided to come here and, you know, live this life. And I just kind of happened to be here by default because I didn't have a choice.
Right.
So we are basically living the consequences of their decisions.
Yeah, no, for sure. We don't. Like you said, we don't have a choice of where we happen to be when we're born, or where they happen to move us when we're really young. It's like you're just a kid, and all you want to do is like make friends and do stupid stuff and like have fun, right? Like you don't know what work is yet. You don't, you know, even if you are still actively living in poverty, you kind of, your brain doesn't process it in that way. You know, you're kind of, you have this freedom of just being a kid. Yeah. Some great stuff between Sanja and Solomon. He thinks things are getting better for Koreans, in Japan where they are here. And she's like, yeah, that's, if you think that, then you're like stupider than I thought. Then we get like this plot, this thing that will come back later, like there's this girl named Hannah. I think it's his. My impression was that it's his.
It's his first
cousin.
Love. No, it's his first. Oh, you feel no. That's his first love. So, the woman that lives with, like, at his house, right? Mm-hmm. That's the, Hannah's mother is yeah. actually like his dad's girlfriend.
Oh, interesting. Because I thought that that was his aunt.
No.
And like, but you know, in fairness, they don't, I feel like they haven't told you yet. So this is like insight from the book, right? No, but that's, I mean, that's helpful to know. Cause I think they're being coy in a way.
Or I saw it on Wikipedia.
Listen, Wikipedia is a kind of book.
It has words on it.
It has words on it and you can read them. But that's interesting. Yeah. I couldn't tell if they were trying to tell us that it was a romantic relationship or it was like a playful, like sibling cousin relationship.
Well, I haven't gotten this far in the book yet, and obviously not in this show, but I think, you know, obviously he and this, his mom, his dad and this woman have been dating for a long time. So the kids basically kind of grew up together and clearly Hannah has some issues. And Solomon is really into the damaged type, I guess.
Who among us?
Pining for her.
Who among us? Yeah. Is that...
But that was such a curveball. Like, I wasn't expecting this, like, other plot, you know?
Yeah. It felt like it was, like, out of the blue or...
Yeah. I'm like, who is this chick? Why is she calling him? Like, how does she know? Is she watching him? Like, it was kind of creepy. Number?
Yes, because there's that part where she's like... Oh, who's that girl next to you? And he's like, are you watching me now? And he's like looking out the window like at just random buildings.
Yeah, and her mom's like hiring some
private investigator
to like track her down and find her. And you're like, where is this going? Because clearly Hannah's gotten herself into some trouble or she's dying.
Yeah, she both. Works at a, right, she works at what they call... A soap bar? No, a soap.
You know what a soap,
soap
bar
land.
Is.
Yes, I looked it up. Yeah, soap land, not soap bar. It's like a brothel of sorts, and So she has this like very playful relationship with Solomon. She calls him in his office. She's like, "I'll be calling you soon," and yeah. So it's interesting. That's interesting now to have that insight. And, you know, again, at the end of the episode, we already mentioned this, but, you know, the father, you know, he has this like really touching part where he says these lines about like, I used to wonder why I had bad fortune, but then I met your mother and had you and realized that like fortune had nothing to do with it. I was supposed to protect you. And that was like my mission in life, to be worthy of you. But then years later,
spoiler alert, that shit's not in the book. Oh no, can I say that? Can I say that? Because that part was so touching, right? Obviously, you know, at the end of like episode one, when he dies, everyone's just kind of crying a little bit because, you know, her dad was such a sweet man and they had such a great relationship. And then unfortunately, he dies early because, you know, they didn't have vaccines back then for certain things. And, you know, so, but you know, that like when you hear kind of like his like final words and like her remembering that, like that stuff wasn't in the book. Cause in the book, like he just dies. It's just like a line.
It's like,
and then he got tuberculosis and you know, passed away. And you're like, that's it. I don't know if they're going to go back to that. Like, you know, obviously they might get into it again.
Like perhaps in a flashback or something.
Maybe, but I was like, that's some nice writing. If literally that
if that's like written for the show.
Yeah, I was like, who wrote that?
Get this person a job writing the other book. Yeah. And then we cut to, you know, and unfortunately he passed away. And then it's 9 years later and she's almost an adult. She's a woman now. Yes. And there's some rando guy who is like, referred to as the fish broker
creeping on her. So in the book he's supposed to be twice her age. When she's about like 16-17 and he's like early 30s. So I don't know if that translates because obviously Asians always look young, so I don't know if
it's your gift.
It's one of our gifts.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that comes through with Lee Minho's character, because he's actually like 40, almost 40.
Yeah, he doesn't look it here.
He doesn't look like a creepy old man.
No, to your point, I think they do look a lot closer than age here. And, you know, maybe they like changed their internal story for the script of like the age difference wasn't going to be that much. But they definitely read as basically the same age, if not similar. Like he's
right, like a little bit older.
Right? Yeah.
Established, but not twice her age.
Yeah.
That K-beauty. Product.
Yes, and he's like, "Who is she?" And then the episode ends.
That never happens to me when I go to the market. Yeah. Does that happen to you?
It hasn't yet, but you never know. Lots of markets still left, and maybe it has happened to you, but you just didn't know because they're so busy, like longing for you from far away, that you can't see the binoculars. I mean, these days, you know, there's binoculars. There's all kinds of like creepy.
I think I would notice if Lee Minho was looking at me. I mean, I don't know if this is, you're going to get to this part, but I mean, for someone who, you know, I mean, she's got a lot going on. She's got him and she's got like the pastor guy. Like she has a lot of options for
someone who's
in a little village.
Yeah. Cause basically she's gonna, you know, she's gonna go through a whole emotional affair journey with this guy, with the creepy fish vendor, and then, you know, get pregnant by him, and then basically he's like, oh, BT dubs, I also have like a wife and kids separate from you, even though I care about you, and like our child, I will give money to you for our child, but like we can't be together and I definitely can't marry you. Which sets her on the path of like then meeting the sick pastor who comes to stay with them, and you know, he's like, hey, I'm a good option B, and she's like, yeah, it's not a bad option. I mean, she kind of lucked out. I mean, as much as you can say lucked out for like that situation. it's not terrible, and the pastor's not bad looking either. It's not like, you know, in certain movies, like Pride and Prejudice comes to mind, where the suitors are just like so undesirable. The ones that are trying to get with, what's her name?
Elizabeth Bennet.
Elizabeth Bennet, yes. That you're like, oh no, that's not an option. But the pastor shows up and you're like, I mean, that's not bad. That's not a bad. I mean, not when he's sick, after he gets better. You know, I don't want to get TB from him, but.
Yeah, you're like, I believe in Jesus now.
Yeah. I have seen God. And it is this man.
I mean, that explains why, like, you know, adult, I guess we call her adult Sanju.
Yeah, I was calling her Sanja. Grandma Sanja.
Adult. I don't know. It's hard when it's like three different time.
Yeah.
Periods,
I mean, luckily for the most part, we only get little baby Sanja, or like little like small kid Sanja for a little bit, and it seems like for the rest of the time, at least in these episodes, it's old grandma Sanja, and then, you know, like in her prime, whatever, 18 mm-hmm. 20 year old Sanja.
But like, you know, because she's religious, you know,
mm-hmm.
when she's older, and like the pastor comes to like their house after her sister-in-law passes away, so you're just like, oh, that's why.
Yeah, that is why. Yeah, because she had to learn it from somewhere. She picked up the custom of that. I mean, it became her culture, basically, right? I mean, for lack of a better word, where she's just like,
yeah,
you
and
believe
at that
it.
Even at that time, too, it's like religion, like Christianity, Catholicism, just like that kind of stuff wasn't as prevalent.
Yeah, right. Because to that point, when the pastor shows up,
in the Asian
they're
culture.
Like, oh, he's one of those Christians from up north. Like, he's like, it's like, it's not a common thing.
No, it wasn't. I mean, yeah, no, she definitely had to learn a lot
mm-hmm.
and believe in something that maybe she wasn't even like, I don't know, I guess it wasn't even an option, right? Because it's not like anybody like in her village, or you know, whatever the country mm-hmm. at the time, that wasn't a big thing,
right? Yeah, yeah. So she kind of just learns it. I guess in that sense, like out of necessity. And you know, that storyline where that ends up, you know, as at least as far as like these first four episodes, she meets the pastor. Then he's like, I could be a good option. And I couldn't help but overhear because literally the walls are terrible in our houses because, you know, they're not.
It's those paper walls.
Yes. Yeah, he's like, I couldn't help but overhear your conversation with your mother where you told her that you were with child. I could protect you with that. And they
also
end
doesn't
up,
happen in the book.
Yeah. They're a lot more forgiving on the show, perhaps. What's the word? Progressive, perhaps.
I mean, they definitely do it for drama factor, right? Because what's more interesting, like you like eavesdropping and hearing this big secret, or the mom just like telling you to your face.
Yeah, no, definitely what they did here. It's like, ooh, and it gets him out of bed. Like he had been bedridden the whole time and then he hears a secret. And that's like seemingly the thing that made him get better. He's like, ooh, gossip? Yes, I have risen. Like it's like he's ready to go after that. So yeah, that storyline, you know, by the end of the four episodes, she agrees to marry him, but then there's some friction because the child that she is carrying and eventually has is, we know, and the father, the real father knows, it belongs to him. It belongs to the jerk fish vendor guy who has another family and got her pregnant. And he doesn't like that there's another man who is around, you know, potentially about to raise his baby. And they have like the standoff at the tailor shop.
As Beyonce would say, if you like it, then you should have put a ring on it. And he did not. So he can't be getting jealous of a servant of God.
Uh-huh.
What did you think about that scene at the tailor shop?
I think that it's really fun. Like you're not sure. It's that like really cool thing that happens in fiction, whatever, that like, are these two characters really about to talk about the thing that they're talking about? Or are they going to continue to like play this like little chess game? I think it's interesting because it doesn't seem like they're going to talk about it. And then they both try to like flex at each other where, you know, obviously figuratively, where he's like the douchebag guy who's the actual who's the biological father is like, oh, you know, basically flaunting that knowledge and like telling him that he's aware, like, oh, I am basically the father, and then offering to like pay for his suit. And then the pastor has to come back and be like, oh no, I'll pay for it myself. But by the way, we're getting married to the tailor. It's like, isn't that so exciting? Like kind of like an F you to the guy. So I think they both, you know, I was pleasantly surprised that the pastor like kind of sank down to his level and was like willing to go one-on-one with him.
Caddy.
Caddy is definitely the word. Was it caddy for you as well? Was it a caddy interaction?
Yeah, I felt like I was watching The Bachelorette. It was awesome.
You're like, ooh, who's going to get the rose tonight?
Well, clearly the pastor.
Clearly the pastor. And it's a beautiful moment later on when she, you know, the mother, her Sunja's mother is trying to secure like literally just rice, white rice for her daughter because her daughter's getting married and it's like something fancy and like more quality certainly than like the barley or other kinds of wheat that they eat. You know, white rice is like a higher quality, you know, grain, and it's like highly regulated, and the Japanese people who are here are like taking that from Korea and like exporting it back. And she basically has to beg this guy for the rice, but then once she like tells him that it's for her wedding, that it's for her daughter's wedding, he gives her the rice. And it's just like very lovely, this, because it connects later on, we'll see, it connects back to Grandma Sunja when she has the memory of it. But it's like this very sweet story of like the mother trying to do what little she can for her daughter Sunja, because, you know, as we keep saying, they're so poor.
And oh, how things have changed, because now no one wants to eat white rice.
Because it's bad. Thanks, Atkins, for telling us that carbs are bad and treating
very bad.
And like, yeah, like fooling us into thinking that white rice is delicious and it's not bad for you and everything is everything in moderation. I am not a doctor, but I love eating rice. And as long as you're not like only eating rice, you should be fine. That's my unprofessional opinion.
But it's like, so when we go back to the scene, right, when like the two grandmothers, right, like Solomon brings his grandmother to, you know, try to convince, you know, the other grandmother, you know, to sell her property, right? And they have, she just like gives them some rice, and, you know, like he doesn't even think twice about it, right? Like he eats it, like doesn't really taste a difference, but like his grandmother has like a very different reaction. And I think that's like so true of people who, you know, I think we just have so many options, right? Like we're very spoiled, but like even my mom, like, and I start to taste the difference too, as well. And I'm sure as you can with, you know, some of the foods that like you're used to eating, like growing up, like rice does taste differently depending on like what country it's from, like how it's prepared, you know, it's
style.
Like, right.
100%. It's so funny you mentioned that, because I have, so like my mom would cook rice and beans every single week. And like, it was always, you know, you can obviously cook the rice and beans together, right? Where like the beans kind of like dry up and like flavor the rice, but like you can also serve, and it was normal for us in the beginning of the week, like literally every Monday, we would have rice and beans separate. And my mom's white rice, like, you know, when you're a kid, you don't really like notice that kind of thing. It's not till like later on when you start to like understand variations and things. But like now I have white rice, and it's like, and it really struck me when I would have friends over and they're like, oh my God, the rice tastes so good. Like this just has a flavor. And it's just like, to your point, it's just white rice. Like my mom was just making it the way that she would make it. But between the kind of rice that they choose and whatever their style of cooking it, that like gives it a very unique flavor, all within the umbrella of just what quote unquote white rice.
When I went to college, my parents, you know, bought me a rice maker to keep in my apartment.
Of course.
And my roommates would go crazy. They would like beg me to make them rice. Like, and you know, granted, you know, my parents would like cook and bring me back like panchan to like keep in the freezer and like, you know, heat up. But I wouldn't even need to do that. Like rice and seaweed was the equivalent of a birthday dinner for my roommate. Like she would go crazy for it. And she's just like, oh, this, you know, you have to make it, like make it in the
it's your way. You know how to make it the special way.
Yeah. And it's like, your rice tastes the best. And I'm like, all I do is wash the rice, put the water in and push a button. But okay.
You watched me do it. Like I didn't do anything.
I'm like, you
special.
Can do it too.
They're like, no, I can't.
No, I mean, it is a water thing too. I mean, you have you know what I mean?
The amount and like the
and
kind.
It's like a personal preference. Like, do you like it kind of like dry? Do you like it like porridge? Mm-hmm. But it is, I mean, it is a combination of the type of rice too that, right? Like we were buying and making, and it does taste different. And my mom's like a big rice snob. So she's, when she goes to a restaurant, like that's like, she really judges a place by how the rice is. Like, it doesn't even matter what else comes with it.
Yeah. So. It's so funny. Now I'm like going on this like tangent in my head of like all the rice kinds, and like to your point, the consistency of the rice, like a little drier, much wetter rice, and you know, and like different cultures have different norms and whatever, you know. Like my mom would say, "Ugh, pasty rice. I hate when it's pasty." I'm like, listen, it's one thing if you do it by accident, right? And you're like trying to make drier rice, but you make pasty rice by accident. But like certain cultures, pasty rice is the rice, and it's like, that's just, mom, that's just how it is. Like it's just, you know, it's, and it's funny when you're teaching like a parent who's already from a different culture, and you have to make them understand that there are in fact other cultures that aren't their culture. It's just, it's a really funny like teachable moment where you're like, you, because of your experience, we live here in the US and like we have access quote unquote to all these other cultures more so than they did, and you're like kind of more well-rounded and more multicultural in a sense than they are. It's it's wild. It's wild what like so much like importance and conversations just about food and like culture in that way.
Yes, we're very lucky to be here in New York, where we have access to so many different kinds of rice.
So many different kinds of rice. That's the new thing. I'm sure there is. I mean, there is actually, now that I think about it, there is a rice pudding place called Rice to Riches. It's literally just rice pudding, but we haven't seen yet where they own like the pop-up cart or the new hot place where they only sell rice.
Could happen. That's going to be our thing.
Did I just give away the idea that we're going to do? But yeah, like we already went into it a little bit, but basically so Solomon, Sunja's grandson, has to come back and convince this like one holdout woman who has a house basically on like a piece of land where they want to develop. And like, geez, we're still doing this, right? Like all this time later. And you know, obviously it happens everywhere, but he's trying to convince her and he can't, even though he's quote unquote a local, he's not like, you know, like a foreign banker, but he has the idea of bringing his grandma to meet this woman. And that's when there's this like beautiful moment where Grandma Sunja is eating the white rice and she's like, wait a minute, can it be? And she's like, yes, I have it delivered special. And like, you still don't know what's happening. And then they're like, Solomon, taste the rice. And he's like, oh, I don't know. It's just like rice. Like he doesn't get it. It's like, but the thing you find out is like this rice is imported from Korea and it tastes especially to Grandma Sunja like the rice that she had, and it makes her sad and mournful in this moment because it reminds her of her mother and like the rice that she had on her wedding day.
And she's homesick because she hasn't been back to Korea in however many years, like since she got married.
Yeah.
So do we know why? I mean, this is probably a really dumb question because I clearly did not, you know, it's weird. Like after I moved here, right, I just spent so much of my life trying to assimilate to American culture and like be Absolutely. American that I really, and then like shun or ignore like my roots. But, you know, I definitely didn't pay that much attention to it or was that interested in like the history of it because I spent a lot of time just trying to like fit in and blend be in. Yeah. American.
Yeah.
You know, but thank God, like my parents, you know, still, you know, raised me to speak Korean at home, like sent me to Korean school. They're like, you have to at least be able to like read and write. Mm-hmm. I'm not so good with the writing, but read and like, you know, speak the language. And so I'm like so grateful for it now.
Yeah.
And you know, I have become much more curious about, you know, just the culture and, you know, the people and the history. Like I personally also have not been back to Korea since I was 4. So it's been about like, you know, over 30 years. And I'm just like begging my mom to like take me and go as soon as this COVID situation gets under control. But I'm just like so curious. And, you know, my question is, you know, let's go back to the other thing. I did not realize that Japanese-Korean relations were that strained. And then I had watched a movie with my mom years ago. Do you remember the name of that movie with Angelina? She had directed it, but it was about like the war and like
Milk
the American
and Honey?
Who was in. No, it was different. It was
a Constant one. Gardner?
No.
We're just going to keep guessing.
You're just going to name all her movies.
Gone in 60 Seconds. No.
It was about American like during the World War. Like he was like a prisoner of war there. And it was with that like.
It was an old war movie. I'm picking Unbroken.
Yes. Yeah. True story, right? Because he was the Olympic runner. Or what was he? Right?
Yeah. Yes. I'm remembering this now.
Okay. So my mom, like I watched that with my parents and she just like was not happy with the Japanese. You know, she was like saying a couple things and I was just like, where is this coming from? And I guess Koreans are still like maybe just her generation now, you know.
Yeah.
But like she was just like, oh, they were terrible people and like all this stuff. And I was like, yeah, like, you know, that feeling of like, you know, just I guess it was like racism because, you know, the Japanese saw very little of the Koreans and, you know, the way they were treating them and all that. But mm-hmm. it's still like that, those feelings of like resentment and anger are like still there.
Yeah, they don't go away.
Yeah, so watching this now, there's a lot more context, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, yeah, sure, we in history class, like we learned about like colonization and like, you know, taking over, you know, countries and like that, you know, didn't belong to you and like how the natives like kind of suffered from that. And I guess this is no different, but because, you know, we didn't learn like world history, we learned American history. Like exactly. You're kind of shielded from that, but it happens mm-hmm. everywhere.
Yep.
You know, and so it's just kind of, it seems almost weird to see it play out and then, you know, having been treated that way, but then still going to live in the country of your quote unquote, you know, enemy.
Oppressor, yeah.
Yeah, oppressor. And then not going back to your own country for so long. So I was like, why didn't she just go back home? Like, I just didn't understand, like, why, you know, Grandma Sunja and the other grandma just didn't, you know, after they made money or whatever, like, why couldn't they just go back to Korea? Like, why did they stick it out in this place for so long?
Yeah, you know, you get stuck and it's easier to stay. Like, similar to you, you know, I haven't been to the Dominican Republic since I was 11 for one of my cousin's weddings, and it makes me sad now. Like, to your point, you know, when I was a kid, you just try to fit in, you know, you bring like weird things to school for lunch and like that makes you stick out, and the whole time, and you're like ashamed of like, you know, like your language. But I'm so grateful now that my parents basically didn't speak English and only speak like emergency English now, what I call emergency English, and like I still speak Spanish to them. And that's something that like, it has so much more value to me now because I have that perspective. And, you know, a little bit to what I was saying at the beginning of this, I really wish that I could have the experience of like seeing my parents' roots, the way it's presented here, of like their lives and some of the stuff they went through. And I mean, that's just life, right? Like, you don't get to do that. Nobody gets to like go back in time and understand their history. But in this case, when your quote unquote roots are so far from where you are now, it's so fascinating to think like, how do I fit in? How do I not fit in? What, you know, like I always have these ideas of like, I want to like just record my parents talking about certain things so that I can have it for later, because, you know, obviously we're not all going to be around forever. And like, they're all you have. Like, you have other members of your family and extended family, but your only connection to that is them, right? Like, it's literally it, and you're here in like this new place and you're like, wow, I'm American. But like, you know, it's just wild. And I appreciate that this show is giving us that perspective, like through Solomon. You know, the show is showing a version of like, I guess, what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm. And to your point too, it's like, that I think about it, you know, when my grandma was living with us, you know, for like the past 10 years, someone that I hadn't seen since, you know, also like probably when I was 4, you know, I really wish that, one, we had like a relationship earlier on, you know, because by the time she was here, like, her dementia had kicked in and she wasn't able to like communicate with me. I can really ask her questions, like, she couldn't tell me stories. But you know, my mom would just kind of like tell me, you know, stuff about my grandmother. And like, you know, my grandparents on my mom's side, you know, were North Korean. And, you know, they fortunately were able to, you know, move to the South before like shit went down and they divided the country up and it was a whole thing. But, you know, just even the way that she like raised my mom's family, you know, she had like 6 kids, she worked a farm by herself, like just all this like stuff that, you know, she went through. I'll never be able to get, you know, the full story from her, but even just like the little bits and pieces that my mom's been able to share with me, even about like her, you know, childhood and growing up, like that's all just so interesting to me now. Whereas I think when I was younger, like I didn't really have time for it. I was too busy, you know, living my own.
You're too busy, like, basically rejecting it. You're just like, no, that's not cool. You're cramping my style.
Yeah, but it's definitely something as you get older, you start to appreciate more. And, you know, knowing, like, where you come from, like, where your parents come from, like, where your grandparents. And so I think this is why this show, this story, this book, you know, just everything it kind of stands for, even if you're not interested in, like, Korean culture or anything at all, that's not the point, right? It's the story of just, like, generations of, like, a family, and everyone has gone through that, right? Every family has gone through their own stuff.
Yeah, every family has history, every family has trauma, every family has trouble, you know. To your point, a lot of pieces of the story, if not every single one, is, like, pretty universal. And it's just beautiful. And the way it's presented here of, like, we're told at the very beginning, yes, this child will thrive, and, like, through this child, your family will basically have a purpose. And it's, like, it's really cool to see it play out. So yeah, so basically just there are only a couple more things to touch on, but you know, we talked about the meeting of the grandmothers, basically, as we've been calling it, and she gets really emotional because she has, like, the special Korean rice. And basically that storyline ends in a really great moment that we kind of teased already, of, like, so the woman finally accepts and agrees to sell the house, right, for literally, like, a billion yen, I believe is the figure. And then push comes to shove, she shows up to the office, everyone's really excited, and they're kind of pushing her a little too hard, and she's, like, second guessing herself. And then in the end, she says to Solomon in Korean, like, this is what I loved about that scene, is, like, they're all speaking Japanese, like, in the bank, and they're in Japan. Obviously, Solomon speaks both languages. He seems to be the only one, maybe that other girl that he has connected with at his office. And then they're all speaking Japanese, but she switches to Korean and asks him outright, like, if I were your grandmother sitting here in front of you, would you tell me to sign this and sell my house or not? And he thinks about it and he hesitates and he's like, no, don't sign it, don't sell. It's like, oh my God, he did it. He did the thing. It's crazy. I can't believe, like, in a sense, like, you can tell where the scene is going. So I wasn't outright surprised, but I was pleasantly surprised that this is where it went.
What would you have done?
Oh God. I mean, they just connected. I think it's undeniable. Like, the short answer is I absolutely would have done what he did, because especially after the meeting of the grandmas, especially after, like, seeing them sitting with each other and, like, connect, and, like, maybe if the grandma hadn't met the other grandma and he could, like, maybe lie, and because he's a little bit, like, more emotionally distant, but now he's like too close. He's too close in it. There's no way he can tell her that he would tell his grandma to do it. I mean, I want to believe, right? That's probably, like, my lame answer. I want to believe that I would do this thing, that I wouldn't be, like, this cold-blooded creature of, like, I'm just chasing the money, you know, I need my 10% bonus or whatever.
MVP title.
It's not nothing. Yeah, it's basically like a hero moment for him. And then we cut to, you know, everyone is, like, really angry at him. She walks out and we cut to him, like, he goes out and he takes off his tie. And there's that really beautiful shot of his tie, like, falling between the stairs, which they use in the trailer to great effect. And he's literally dancing in the rain like a fool. But he's happy because he's free, because he's honest and seemingly hasn't been able to be this honest in a while. I think it's a great, you know, I don't know. Would you have done the same thing?
No.
You would have lied.
No, I wouldn't have lied. I would have just told her to sell it. Like, now I sound like a bloodthirsty.
No, I mean, I made a lot of colorful comments, but whatever, be honest.
No, it's like, you know, it's one of those things where it's, you know, there's sentimental reasons why people, you know, hold on to certain things. And you know, letting go isn't necessarily a sign that like you've given up or you don't care about something. It's basically like seeing, you know, appreciating like everything you've gone through to get to this point. Mm-hmm. But then looking out for yourself, you know, for the future and like kind of what's best. And I just don't feel like you should hold on to stuff if that's not going to ultimately, I don't know, make you happy. And I don't know what grandma was thinking. Like, she just wants to like live out her days. I mean, don't you feel like a part of it was like she's doing it to spite the Japanese and being like,
yeah, I mean, certainly. Yeah. She's sitting there in that room. And again, they're playing it way too hot. Like they're coming in way too strong. They really should have played it way more cool. Like she's this older woman. She couldn't feel any more. Not just out of place, but like no one in this room is on her side. No one in this room has her perspective. Solomon is the closest thing that she has to an ally. They really messed it up. Like they blame Solomon for messing it up, even though they don't speak the language and they just kind of assume rightfully so that he messed it up somehow. They really blew it. And they being like everyone else around and they're all speaking Japanese. And to answer your question, yeah, there's a level of like, you know what? F this. Like they took so much from us. And now I'm supposed to like, you know, and Solomon's telling her, you know, now they owe us. Like they took so much from us and now we're going to take their money. But like she has what they want. She has the precious commodity, which is the land that they want. She's like, no. I don't want to sell it. You can't make me.
No, right. You're 100% right. Because part of the reason why he convinced her in the first place was because he's like, they owe us now. It's like time for them to pay for, you know, what they've done to us. And so like that was like the selling point for her.
Yeah.
And then what should have happened was like the signing should have just been like him and like just one and that check from the bank.
Yeah, it could have happened at the house even like or over the rice dinner. Yeah, they like I keep saying, they really shit the bet on that one. Like they're playing it way too cocky. Like that's not the energy you bring to like an old woman who already is unsure and like look all the effort that it took to get here. Anyway, I mean, that's on them as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. So I mean, as Solomon, I would have advised that she sell, but as the grandmother, I wouldn't have sold probably.
No, I'm not.
I would have sold
that
to somebody else, actually. That's what she should have done. She should have sold it to like a competitor.
Yeah. Maybe, yes, right? Where it's like, then she's really sticking it to them. Then she's like, oh, you wanted it? Oh, no, I'm not going to sell it to you. I will sell it to someone else. And I think that actually would have been funnier. Like, she's obviously not in it to just be outright like, you know, mischievous or beyond that, like worse, you know, kind of evil to them. But she could have, that would have been the way like cooler thing to do. And then like cut to like her on a beach somewhere tropical, but I guess that's not really her speed. She just wants to be happy.
Where would she go? Like Vietnam?
I mean, she could go
Thailand.
Local. If she has she has a couple billion yen to throw around, she could maybe afford.
We'll go back to Korea. Stuff.
Yeah.
Live on Jeju Island, which is supposed to be like, you know,
see
the Hamptons.
Something. I want to go to the Hamptons of anywhere else. So yeah, that's over. That's not gonna happen, at least not this episode. And another thing I just like quickly want to touch on is I briefly mentioned that coworker of his that he has. Like that's it's a woman that he works with who he connects with at a party before this and is like, there's a level of like respect and understanding that they share. And like, cause they have both spent a lot of time in America and been like exposed to the same kind of like nonsense, to be quite honest, of just like, oh yeah. And then they love to guess what kind of Asian I am, that kind of stuff. And you can tell, like, did you see it this way? That like, when this all goes down, she respects the girl, the coworker that I'm talking about, respects Solomon's decision here to basically blow the whole thing up.
Yeah, because that's how they move the story along. There's definitely, yes, I'll be interested to see how it plays out in the book, if it does at all, if her character even actually exists. But I mean, yeah, there has to be a point because, like, they first start kind of off as, like, rivals almost. Mm-hmm. And she's like, oh, he's just another, you know, American prick, you know, mm-hmm. coming here to, you know, take my job.
Right.
And then she sees him evolve and she respects that. And they're probably going to date and have babies. I don't know.
That's the only logical place. But yeah, she did see him. She's the one sole witness. We keep talking about him dancing in the rain. She has her umbrella because she's, like, you know, a functioning member of society, even though I don't like umbrellas. And she watches him and she kind of smiles. Like, she appreciates that she sees him, but she's not going to, like, tell him yet that she's watching him. She, like, acknowledges that it's him and then kind of, like, keeps
going. She's not going to rain on his parade.
Yes, dude. Yes, you did it.
I'm done now. Also, oh, yeah, do you find that it's weird for us to remember people's names on this show because one half of them are like a different language?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sitting here like reading stuff off of IMDb, just like hoping against hope that I'm not like completely butchering, you know, like earlier I was trying to say her name and like the J was silent, but the J is not silent.
But even, but yeah, oh, Sonya versus Sonja.
Yeah, Sonja, yeah.
And then also like that co-worker's name is Naomi.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's really hard to pronounce.
Yeah, well, she, it sounds to me like, especially as someone who like went to America at a young age, she probably had like a quote unquote Americanized name, you know, like that she took on. But
right, because the pastor's name is, isn't it Isaac? It's Isaac. Pastor's name is,
yes,
Isaac.
And he has a, not an Americanized name, but a biblical name.
Biblical name.
Is a very common thing of like people who convert to
but
any
in
religion.
Korea,
really.
They pronounce it Isaac.
Oh, see? Yeah, so it's like a subtle, it's a subtle thing of like just alphabets and languages.
Certain
and stuff.
Alphabets and letters do not exist in the Korean language.
Yes. Yeah, so that's a beautiful ending. And then at the end also we get Grandma Sonja, who we already teased, like, you know, wants to go back to, especially after having that conversation with other grandma, she really wants to go back to Korea before it's too late because she's older and her sister-in-law just died. And in the end, the last scene we see is like her returning seemingly to that same beach where she was collecting stuff underwater with her dad. And she's like going like too far into the water for me to feel okay about an old person going to the water.
I really thought she was gonna just like go into the ocean
for forever, like she went there to like end herself. Yeah, I mean, thankfully maybe the show will go that dark later on, but thankfully not here. It's like a moment of like triumph.
But didn't it almost feel like an ending, like the end of that fourth episode could have been like the,
it could have been the ending
finale
of like the part one of the movie or a season finale. I agree. Like it definitely felt like, I think we picked the right time to, you know, to end the discussion. It did feel like an ending, you know, the returning of her to where she came from. It is like a full circle moment. So it kind of makes sense thematically that it would feel like a little bit of an ending. Yeah. So that was beautiful. Is there anything else? I feel like we've hit the majority of the plot points. Is there anything?
Do you want to talk about the opening credits?
I'm so glad you said that. I love the opening credits. I was about to say no shade to Peacemaker, maybe some shade to Peacemaker, which is like an HBO Max show, you know, John Cena, whatever, superheroes, and they're dancing. This is like so authentic. My personal take is, especially a show like this that is clearly dealing in like such heavy themes and can be pretty dark, as some of the stuff we've talked about, to have such a joyous display of like dancing in this very colorful pachinko parlor environment, it's beautiful. Like, I love it. It's not one that I would skip. You know, I think there's always that debate nowadays, right? And like the streamers give you the option to skip, like, is this a skip one or not a skip one? I really love it. And I love to see like, and I love to imagine the cast having fun and like they're bonding. It's sounding so stupid as I say it out loud, but how did you feel about it?
Well, first of all, I think it's interesting you brought up the whole skip intro thing, because I was listening to another podcast and they were saying how people who skip intros of shows are like sociopaths. So
as someone who rarely skips, only when like I'm binging or I'm in a hurry, like I have a reason to skip, because I feel like it puts you, like, it's intentional and it helps you. It's like an on ramp for my emotions to like get onto the highway of the show.
Do you watch it every time, like for the same show?
I will say this. Yes. Like, I was binging Survivor. I did 40 seasons over quarantine. And some of the later seasons, like, eventually they stopped doing like a full credits, and they just, like, you know, because they use that 1 or 2 minutes, they can put it into content, right? Or ads, whatever. And I would play the opening credits from YouTube and then go back to the, because I needed it. It was not just that I like it, I like watching it. I feel like for certain shows, I need it in order to like really get the emotional like outcome that I want from the show.
Okay, that's fair.
Do you like this one? Do you like this particular one?
Well, I'm a skipper, right? Okay, I'll watch it once.
Right. Fine. you'll experience it.
But I'll either like go to the bathroom or like get food during it. It's like a commercial, right? Because nowadays we don't watch commercials anymore. Right. That's the only break I'm going to get for the next, you know, hour or so. Uh-huh. So, you know, the only intro I like is the one from Big Little Lies.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah. We stood on that bridge.
And then you hummed the song to me. And
because there was no reception.
We're on that bridge in person, in real life, and there's no reception. And I really wanted to drive across the bridge with the song playing, and I couldn't get reception, so Ariel hummed it for me, and it was great. You know, I think this is very common, especially with like K-dramas. They do like a real bait and switch where they'll have like this like really, you know, happy piece of like key art or really happy intro. And then the actual show is about like murder and like kidnapping and, you know, it's like really effed up stuff. And you're just like, okay, this isn't like, it's not really setting the tone for me. It's really just playing with my emotions.
Quit playing games with my heart.
Yeah. And so it just kind of like, I don't know, for a show like this, I would just expect something a little bit more like subdued and beautiful and, you know, whatever. So it's definitely like, I don't know, if it was on any other show, maybe it wouldn't bother me as much. But it just seems like it's not my favorite.
It's not for you. Yeah. No, what I love. No, of course. Not everything is for everyone and nobody has to like anything, period. Full stop. What I love about it. So, I mean, I already said this a little bit, but like, especially when it comes to family stuff and like heavy family stuff and generational trauma and like, you know, I can't get enough. As hard as it is to watch this stuff, I have like a black hole in my heart of like, I can watch all BoJack Horseman in one sitting. I watch like all of The Wire, like certain shows that people are like, oh, you have to take a break, it's really heavy. I don't have to take any breaks. So for me to get like this moment, this hit of joy, especially to color in the fact that like, that's how families are. Families are all of these things at once, the full emotional spectrum. It's really effed up and it's really beautiful and joyful. And the joy, I think the joy is so important, especially as you like look back at like your history and your family and what it meant to you. And that's the stuff that becomes more important to you, you know, is the joy.
There have been very little moments of joy in the first 4 episodes. So
that's why you gotta put that
intro on repeat.
Sometimes I'll just play the intro in the middle of the episode. It's like a break.
You're gonna be humming that song up and down the hallways.
Yeah, so, you know, I think the only other thing worth mentioning is Hannah calls again, his long-lost love, creepy who you outed Hannah. As a little creepy Hannah who's watching. She calls again, and she's like, oh, is there a celebration? This is like after, or I guess this is right when they think the deal is closed, before the grandma backs out. And she's like, oh, you'll be hearing from me soon. But then she's coughing. So it seems like, it seems like, I'm only laughing because of your whisper, but like, it seems like, you know, they're not going to put her randomly coughing for no reason, you know, especially after all this TB talk in the rest of TB, not TV.
Do you think she has TB?
She could, or she could have any other kind of, like, you know, unfortunate virus, or COVID? Maybe, you know, oh God, or she, you know, maybe she has like a lung thing. It could be anything, unfortunately, but it seems like she might be reaching out because she doesn't have long left, you know, and he's potentially one of the only people that she would want to talk to.
I want to know how she got his number.
His direct extension, I guess ostensibly she could have called, like, you know.
I mean, she's been dodging her mother and
all their private investigators,
you know,
yeah,
all that, like, for years. And then all of a sudden, like, Solomon's in town, and she's like following him on Facebook or something, and just being like, I know where you are.
Yeah.
The call is coming from inside the office.
I see you. Yes, she's like sitting under his desk.
Because he's like, can you see me?
And then she like stabs his foot with like a knife.
Like, you guys, just a reminder, always keep your blinds closed, because you never know who's watching.
Keep your blinds closed and look under your desks.
I don't know, but I'm curious to like see who this person is, because clearly he's still very obsessed with her.
Yes.
And standing in the way of him and Naomi's budding relationship.
Yes. So yeah, that's a good tease. Stay tuned. Yes, I think that's a wonderful place to end it. I'm so excited. Again, this is like a dream come true for me to pod with you soon. I'm so happy that we got to do this. Like I said before, we will be back to discuss episodes 5 through 8 at the end of the season. This pod will appear on the main feed, but it will also be on the Binge Show Recaps feed. Please subscribe and rate. If you need the URL for your podcast catchers, it is postshowrecaps.com/binge. You know, support us any way you can, even if it's just with some clicks. And soon, any last words before we sign off?
Yes, don't watch the show with the English dub. Watch it in the original Korean language with the subtitles, you know. And I see this as someone who doesn't like to read. You just lose a lot of the emotion and, you know, the story and the drama when you have just some random person just, you know, reading the lines. And sometimes those translations aren't even like 100%. So you just
gotta... No. They're awful. I love that you said that. I feel the same way. Like, there's a show on Netflix, Dark, that is in German, that like I actually came across it because the subtitles were like famously bad, or the dubbing was so bad. It wasn't just like regular dubbing. Like, basically the show went viral on Twitter for having like really bad dubbing at the time when it first came out. So I am a full supporter of, like, I know not everyone likes to do it. Not, you know, people like to multitask and do other things while they're watching. I agree with you 100% that the emotion, there's so much non-verbal emotion, but like there's verbal emotion that you can understand even if you don't understand the language, that I think is very important to these actor portrayals and to you understanding the characters and where they come from, because they're human and we're all human, and that's universal. And you should watch the show if you haven't already. And I hope that if you've gotten this far, you knew that we were going to go into spoilers. But we appreciate you so much for listening if you've made it this far. And we will be back for the back half of the season later on. Thanks so much. Bye.